Welcome to the Seahawkers Podcast, Episode 3. While Sports Talk Radio is talking about preseason quarterback battles and noted liar Ryan Braun cheating on his fiance, we are talking Seahawks football. I'm Brandon Schultz, and across the table from me is Adam Emmert.
Hey man, how's it going?
It's going great. Just got back from Seattle, catching the Broncos game. Good to see live action.
Oh, you bet, man. That was a great time. Went out there with a few different people, and we sat a little bit apart, but man, that was awesome to get out there. Fans were in full throat for preseason, which was incredible.
It was incredible, and almost like regular season football with the atmosphere.
Yeah, I mean, as close as you could get, you know. I mean, I'd say 3 out of every 4 seats was filled at the very least.
At least.
Yeah, and man, that first third down comes up, and everybody was standing up and screaming. I mean, it was the real deal. Guys are excited this year.
And like we talked about, that's what we wanted to hear out of that game. So
yeah,
this is the Seahawkers Podcast. We're going to get into the game as well as the upcoming game against the Packers here shortly. We are the Seahawkers Podcast, the official podcast of the official booster club of the Seattle Seahawks. Just how official is this podcast? As soon as Adam declared his love of John Moffatt on the last podcast, the Seahawks traded him to the Cleveland Browns.
My heart is still hurting a little bit.
And then when that fell through,
then I had it's like a girlfriend's gonna come back to you, you know, you think she's coming back, and then she just turns around and leaves you for yet another guy, you know, and then he ends up with the Broncos. It's tough, man. It's tough because John Moffatt was truly one of my favorite personalities on the team. I also thought he was a decent lineman as well. And, you know, it definitely hurts our depth there a little bit. I know the coaching staff is totally sold on Bowie and Sweezy and all those guys, but I really like Moffitt's consistency. I like the way that he played. I think it's a loss. I do, you know, especially for who we got for him, Silver Saliga, the Bronco. Mm-hmm. Our mutual Broncos friend, Jared, has talked a lot about him over the last couple of years, and he's always, oh, this guy, he's going to break out. And every year he's basically practice squad.
Well, let's hope he breaks out this year, because we could use another guy on the defensive line. And I think it speaks to the depth of the Seahawks offensive line.
Definitely.
that they feel that they can trade a guy like John Moffatt and still have that kind of depth to behind him.
Yeah, of course. And it was a great trade for the Broncos as well, because as we saw in the game, Broncos' second unit line, that was a disaster.
Seahawks got all kinds of pressure on Osweiler.
Yeah, that guy was, you know, just running for his life back there, basically. So, yeah, I'm a little disappointed with the Moffatt trade, but, you know, in John Schneider, I trust. So if he thinks that's the guy who's disposable and the guy that we need to trade to upgade some defensive line talent, I'm with you, John. I'll roll with you.
Yeah, we'll roll with it. And, you know, one thing that I want to say before we get started, I love that 3 episodes in, we're already getting feedback on our podcast through our Facebook page. If you haven't checked us out yet, facebook.com/Seahawkers Podcast, and go there, check in. We'll post some things that we're going to talk about for the show. And also
ask for some feedback from you guys on things you would like to discuss or any thoughts you may have as well.
Yeah. Like Todd, who posted after episode 2 saying, I love this podcast, you know, great praise. I think it might be a little bit early for using the L word, Todd. I kind of feel like, you know, it's kind of like telling somebody you love them after the second date.
Look, but I love Todd too. And that $100 I gave him seemed to work out for him to, you know, give us that nice review.
Oh,
so,
okay. That's what it was. All right.
Yeah. Thanks, Todd.
Yeah.
Yeah. Enjoy the Benjamin.
and we also put a note out there that we're looking for feedback on who is better at life than Skip Bayless, and we got a whole a whopping 1 comment, so I think we can do better.
But it was a good one. That was a good one.
It was a good one. Ryan,
one word too.
Yeah, he puts it out there. He says Tebow with a question mark, like
Tebow. Yeah.
Like he's asking the question. Yeah. You know, is Tebow really better at life than Skip Bayless?
I think that's a resounding yes.
Yeah, right. I think if there's one thing we can be sure of, that it's that Tebow is better at life than Skip
Bayless. Yeah, he's genuinely a better guy. I mean, agree or disagree with his politics or his, you know, religious views or anything like that, he's a genuinely nice guy.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can drop the question mark.
Tebow.
Yeah.
Better at life than Skip Bayless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So not the guy we're going to use, Ryan. Thanks for the suggestion. We'll come up with some others. But, you know, next time, let's get a little bit more feedback out there from folks. We'll use it.
Come on, we'll use
it on the podcast.
Do better, listeners. We need it from you.
Do better. We know you're out there.
Yeah.
You're listening.
The analytics say so.
Yes. All right. So
getting into the game.
Let's get into the game. Like you said, it was great atmosphere. I felt that. Even through the first half of football, I kind of felt like as we went into halftime, it was like a full game's worth of football jammed into one half of football.
Oh, absolutely. Name one thing that didn't happen in that first half.
Right. You had the first drive.
Yep.
Touchdown. And you had a kickoff return for a touchdown, and you had a defensive score.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's crazy. When you can score in every phase of the game.
Right.
You ought to dominate.
In one half.
I mean, that's what the Seahawks do at home. I mean, I think the 12th man does fire him up a little bit extra, and I think it makes a difference.
It does make a difference, and that's where we get that home field advantage. When fans can be like that in a preseason game, you could see it translate to the players because they were so much more physical on the field for this game than they were against the Chargers.
Oh, without question. You know, you could just tell the difference in the energy of the stadium between that San Diego game and the Seahawks game. I mean, obviously the Chargers fans aren't going to cheer the Seahawks on, but there were a lot of Seahawks fans at that Chargers game too.
There were. We got a lot of fans down there.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing that surprised me a little bit was how many Broncos fans were at the game and downtown before the game. Well-represented Broncos fans. I will give you a little credit for that.
They did well for a preseason game. It wasn't Packers level. Packers fans really show up at games, but and Minnesota too.
Yep.
They show up pretty well. But yeah, for a preseason game, the Broncos.
I was impressed. But you couldn't hear them one lick because we drowned them out.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, although one Broncos fan did try to shush us on a third down when Peyton was at the line of scrimmage, and I almost slapped him.
Was it Jared or was it?
No, it wasn't Jared. I wouldn't be surprised if he would have done that as well. But he had his mopey face on most of the game, which was kind of fun.
Shushing you during Peyton Manning in CenturyLink.
Yeah, that's not happening.
Wow.
Yeah. And Peyton's going to have to work through that. I'm sorry.
Yeah. But Peyton did work through it. I mean,
yeah.
he was throwing it all over the field. The Seahawks really, the Broncos moved the ball well. And that would be the one criticism I'd say about the Seahawks is that they really didn't get any pressure on Manning.
No, they didn't. But I do believe that Broncos offensive line, at least their first string offensive line, those five starters are a quality group of five starters and work really well together. And when you have a guy that gets the ball off like Peyton does, gets it out on rhythm, on time, quickly, it's going to be difficult to sack him. So with that said, we didn't get a lot of pressure, but that didn't bother me too much. You know, honestly, you're going to give up yards to a Peyton Manning offense.
Yeah.
You just are. I mean, he's one of the three greatest quarterbacks to ever lace him up.
And I think we were conceding that going into the game. And that's why it was good to see those physical plays where they got the turnovers, turned it around for the score in the one case, you know, right on the goal line.
Yeah, and I thought we held up really well against the run. And that
we did.
That made me feel a lot better.
Yeah, better than at the San Diego game where they just ran it right up the middle.
Yeah, that bothered me a lot in that San Diego game because that's how, you know, we finished the year last year was just getting it just, you know, ramrodded right down the middle. And that's tough. I mean, it's tough to beat teams when they can just out-physical you.
And that's exactly why they're looking for that defensive line help in the middle.
Exactly. I did notice they kicked Red Bryant down inside quite a bit in this game. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know that he was particularly effective there. I think he just works best out at like that five technique, you know, a little more outside. But, you know, a couple guys did really flash on that interior defensive line. Jordan Hill, once again, looked good to me, even though, you know, again, the stats didn't really show it. I mean, he had three tackles, but he was double teamed on nearly every play that he was in there. And I watched him work off a couple double teams, especially against the run, and be in on the tackle or, you know, be the second guy in on the tackle. It was impressive. I think this guy is a straight baller. But
now we have to work through his injury.
Yeah, now, but fortunately, it's just a partially torn bicep.
Right.
They say 3 to 6 weeks, you know, I would imagine you're probably going to be close to that 3 to 4 weeks. You know, he's a young guy. I'm sure he'll heal pretty quickly. He doesn't have a history of injuries, so I'm not super worried about that. This guy, he can straight play. And then, you know, the other thing, too, going into week one, we may have Chris Clemens back. And I know he's not an interior defensive lineman, but you know, if we have
him outside, having him on the outside, it's going to help.
It's going to help.
Get the pressure on the quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, that will kind of lead me to, when we talk about the Packers game a little bit, one of the guys I'll be looking for is Tony McDaniels. Mm-hmm. Because he's a guy who hasn't seen the field yet this year.
Right.
And, you know, the coaching staff is saying they need to see more out of this guy, because he's in danger of not making this roster. So,
well, they want him to kind of fill that role that Alan Branch left,
right,
when he left this offseason.
Right. So, you know, between Jordan Hill and, I mean, we still have Jesse Williams to put in there at that, you know, and he hasn't been spectacular, but he hasn't been a schlub either.
Right.
You know, so he's totally serviceable. You know, and with Bobby Wagner in there this time for this game, I think that made a big difference.
It was nice seeing Bobby Wagner, the one guy that got to Manning. He didn't get the sack, but, you know, he got there.
He got his attention, though.
He got Manning's attention. He put Manning on the ground.
Yeah, gave him a little neck check there.
Yeah.
But Bobby Wagner looked really good, really fast. This guy can flat play the game, and it's fun watching a guy with that kind of instincts and speed just start to put it all together. He's going to have a phenomenal season this year as far as our linebackers go. I think he's going to be the guy to really watch for. You know, I love KJ Wright as much as everybody else.
Yeah.
But I think Bobby's better. I really do. So it'll be interesting to see.
I like this young set of linebackers we have. You know, KJ Wright and even Alan Bradford, you know, coming
Malcolm
up.
Malcolm Smith,
you know. And that was the thing. I think there were a lot of people that were worried after Leroy Hill left, but I think Malcolm Smith is... he's better than Leroy Hill. Toward the end of the season, you saw Malcolm Smith in there a lot more than you did Hill.
You looked at that end of the season, and yeah, you did see a lot of Malcolm Smith. And I thought the level of play from that position was increased when Malcolm Smith was in there.
Mm-hmm.
He's not the greatest tackler, but he does have speed. He does have instincts. He's decent in coverage. I think this guy can actually play. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, it sounds like he's going to be playing some strong side, or I don't know.
They're moving him around.
Yeah, so it's kind of hard to tell.
Same with KJ.
Yeah, you know, KJ's been all over. But KJ's brilliant. I mean, this is the guy that Ken Norton Jr., the linebacker's coach, says is kind of the wise sage of the linebacker core. Like, if there is a question, you know, you go to KJ, and he's going to get it answered for you. Whereas the absolute thumper out of that group is Bradford.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, he's the guy that just brings the wood.
Yeah, that's what they've been talking about.
So that's pretty interesting as well. But no, it'll be cool to see how that all shakes out. And then obviously, once Bruce comes back from suspension, mm-hmm. we'll be seeing him at linebacker a little bit more, which I'm actually very excited about. I think that's a better position for him on mm-hmm. the field. I really do. So
yeah, we need to see a lot of, and he's still going to get to the quarterback. He's going to have that opportunity.
Oh, sure. I mean, there's no reason why on like a third and long, he can't take your linebacker and bring him up and put his hand in the dirt, you know, a la Von Miller.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, so, and I think that's kind of what they're trying to emulate at that position with.
Yeah, yeah.
Bruce.
Exactly. You know, only that we'll have Bruce two more games and the Broncos will have Von. So that's kind of nice.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, Von Miller with the 6-game suspension.
6-game suspension. Did that finally go through?
It did. Nobody really knows what the heck it's for, which
right.
is really interesting.
And that it went 6 games.
Yeah, and it wasn't for a second failed test.
Really?
So what does that mean? I don't know, but interesting. But anyways,
I'm sure it'll come out at some point.
Yeah,
maybe.
I mean, if it has, you know, come out to this point when it's not supposed to come out at all, I would imagine we'd hear something, you know, at some point, you know, especially if Vaughn has a legitimate kind of gripe with that, I'm sure. You know,
and it's kind of a similar situation to the Seahawks, though. Although
yes.
I think, you know, with the way Peyton plays, I mean,
yeah.
they throw the ball over the field. They're going to score points.
Sure.
Whether Von Miller's in there for the first 6 games for the Broncos, it's not going to matter for them. It's not going to hurt
their chances.
It might
cost them one game.
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, might.
But
you know?
Same with the Seahawks. I mean, Bruce Irvin isn't going to make or break the Seahawks defense.
Not at all. I mean, if you're that reliant on one player, you're not going to the Super Bowl.
Exactly.
You know.
So let's talk a little bit of offense. Let's. You know, first drive we talked about, they got the ball,
mm-hmm.
drove it right down the field. Well, first 3-and-out by the defense
right.
On the Broncos,
yeah.
and then got the ball back.
3 straight pass plays,
yeah.
Shut them down. And before we get too deep into the offense, I just want to talk a little bit about our DBs.
All right.
Just because... I felt like Walter Thurman played a better game this time after I kind of dogged him on the last pod, so I just wanted to give him a little credit there.
Oh, you're coming around.
Well, I'll just call it like I see it. You know, if he plays well a game, I'll say he played well. If he plays poorly, I'm going to tell you he played poorly. But
he wasn't tackled by a backup punter this time.
No.
I don't know if he had the opportunity. But.
No, he didn't. But Jermaine Kearse made the starting kicker miss on his pick and his kick return, so that was good. But
Jermaine Kearse made everybody miss.
Yeah, I did. So, you know, as far as the DBs go, Browner obviously had a gigantic game. He was ripping the ball out of everybody's hands with his old man strength.
Yeah, out there. He has some old man strength.
Gosh, I mean, that very first possession, he jerked the ball out of Decker's hands and, you know, it ended up being just ruled incomplete. Mm-hmm. But, man, I mean, just one hand and rip, and it was out. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
And, you know, he did it again to Julius Thomas, and that guy's a hoss. You know, he's a big drink of water, and for Browner to do that was pretty impressive. And then he showed you the wheels on the 106-yard touchdown return.
Picked it up and took it all the way.
Yeah, thank you, Manny Ramirez, for just standing there and looking at Brandon as he picked up the ball.
He had the perfect position just to gently shove Browner out of the back of the end zone.
Yeah.
And just kind of, you know.
Or even just touch him while he was on the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was right there, but no.
Yeah, just looked at him.
Well, we got some excitement out of it.
Maybe he harkened back to baseball there for a second and couldn't remember what to do. I don't know, so. But, yeah, so, that you know, as far as the DBs, you know, and then Cam doing Cam things, 11 tackles on the day.
Oh, he was huge.
He is
11
huge.
Tackles in a half, and that's what I'm talking about. That first half was like a full game.
It was like a full game. A lot of, although we didn't see a ton of the offense in the first half.
Well, no, we didn't need to with the defensive return and then the special teams return.
Right. So yeah, getting back to the offense on that first drive, you know, we get the three and out on those three consecutive pass plays. We pick up that first drive and, you know, just matriculate the ball right down the field. Which
right,
was,
Jermaine Kearse getting the touchdown.
Off the bobbled snap.
Off the bobbled snap.
You know, and that's one of those little special things, you know, that remind you who we have a quarterback. You take something that's, you know, a total, you know, botch and pick it up off the ground, have the poise and the presence of mind to still go through your progressions and hit the guy in rhythm on time. That's special stuff.
Yeah, well, and it speaks to Kearse, too. I mean, just running, continuing to run his route. Ran a great route, got to the outside and, you know, just outside of defender's reach and got in the corner there for the touchdown.
And I think that's a little bit of a product of playing with Russell for a season at this point. I mean, if you play with Russell Wilson, you got to believe that every play isn't dead until Giacomini's hitting somebody after the whistle. So, you know, that play's still alive.
You were a little bit upset about the penalties from the O-line this game.
You know, okay, I'm going to try to rein this in a little bit, but there's nothing on God's green earth that frustrates me more than friggin' penalties. Like, come on. This is the stuff that you can control. These are the things that you can totally control. And you're out there, you know, with especially pre-snap penalties. I mean, you know, with a false start or something along those lines. Give me a break. How hard is it to remember you go on three? Yeah. Or don't even remember and just watch the ball. Just watch the ball.
Well,
it's not
McQuiston,
that hard.
I mean, he's right next to...
Right next to the center. And like, you know, so I just don't... I don't get it. It's a indication of sloppiness. It's something that we had to battle through the first half of the year last year. It cost us games. It flat cost us games at the beginning of the year last year.
Particularly in the beginning of the year.
And this is the type of stuff that makes you wonder a little bit about Pete Carroll's approach as a coach and that kind of loosey-goosey atmosphere.
Well, and I think we saw that even in Carroll's first year that we struggled with penalties.
Yeah.
And I think it's continued a little bit, but...
This is two games in a row this preseason where penalties have been an issue.
Yeah. And the good thing about this game is in that first drive, they were able to overcome it. They had the holding call early. It was on first down, so they first and 20. They get a 16-yard pass, give it to Turbin. He gets first down right there on second down. And then, of course, on the 7-yard line, McQuiston gets the false start penalty. But
well, what? The game's not
right in the end zone.
The game's not easy. Is too easy already? Like, you need to go ahead and, like, you know, bump yourself back an extra 10 yards?
That's
like, take it easy on the Broncos defense? Like, come on now.
You have to practice those offensive penalties to be ready for them when they happen during the regular season.
Right. My point is, don't have them happen during the regular season. Just don't do it. Like, look. Holding penalties are one thing. I mean, that's something that can get called on almost every single snap. Like, you know, a guy could get called for holding. I get that. I do. But pre-snap penalties or Breno hitting somebody after the play like he did on the last drive of the first half and getting another 15-yarder, that simply cannot happen. And I'm sorry, although it was funny when he said it, Breno in an interview, they asked him, you know, if there's any, what did, you know, he kind of wished, if he could wish for anything in the world, and he said he wished that they would make louder whistles. So that,
so he knows when the play's
so
over.
So he knows when the play's over. Well, guess what? I don't know. Get a miracle ear. Do something. Like, if you can't hear the whistle, find a way, man. Because this is getting out of hand. Like, I like having a dirty guy, you know, and he's not dirty, but just having a guy.
He plays through the whistle.
Right. Yeah, and I get that. You need a guy that's a little rough around the edges. It's going to pick people off the pile. Like, I'm fine with all that. But, man, be smart about it, okay? Like, just. And I like Breno the person. Like, I think he's a hilarious dude. But you got to clean this up. These penalties, man, these are the things that make me literally throw my hat across the room during a game.
If he's going to do it, though, it's better that he do it on a, you know, PAT than
right
during a drive.
Yeah, exactly. So, but, you know, that first drive was impressive overall. Russell looked sharp. He did overthrow Luke Wilson on the one pass. It would have gotten called back for that holding penalty anyhow. But
you're not really impressed with Luke Wilson this year.
I'm
not seeing what you want out of him this preseason.
He had separation on that one throw. He did. He had him by a step, maybe a step and a half even, you know, and Russell missed him. But there's just no chemistry there. There's no chemistry there. I think Luke Wilson is one of those guys where the game just doesn't come easily to him. Like, it's just not natural for whatever reason. That's how it looks when he's moving around out there. It looks like he's thinking about what he needs to do next rather than just doing it.
Well, I think when they went and got him, they got him because he had some of those intangibles that you look for or that they saw in him, you know, running a good 40 time and being a tall guy, but and not necessarily having that. Well, he wasn't even the starter at Rice. So,
yeah.
But they saw those, you know, and that's
physical
what,
traits.
Yeah, they look for those physical traits that John Schneider and Pete
unique,
Carroll.
Yeah, unique
they
athletes.
Look for those traits, and that's what they saw in Luke Wilson. So, you know, you're not going to hit on everybody, but
I don't know.
And maybe he's one of those guys that you put on the practice squad for a year, and and then next year, he's in that position where he can make the team.
And that makes sense. And I mean, what was he, a fifth round pick?
Yeah.
Yeah. So fifth round pick, and, you know, maybe it doesn't pan out. Well, it was a fifth round pick. How often does a fifth round pick pan out?
Right.
You know, but what I was encouraged by was Sean McGrath's play. You know, he had the one big reception on that first drive.
Had the touchdown.
You know, this is a guy that just has, he does. You could just look, that's the difference right there. Look at Sean McGrath play and look at Luke Wilson play.
Mm.
One of those guys has a feel for the game and the other one doesn't.
Yeah. McGrath catches everything.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, you know, you can catch anything in that beard. Holy cow, like, I think he's got, like, two doves and a partridge and a pear tree in there. Like, there's, like, it's got everything in there.
He's got a good beard, but it's not a Michael Bennett beard.
It's not a Michael Bennett beard, but it's bigger than a Bennett beard. Like, it's got more volume to it.
Well, maybe volume downward, but I feel like Bennett's is, like, out, his width of his beard is
well,
better.
Well, Bennett's sideburn beard, like, where the sideburns come out on the sides, like, that is unmatched. Like, that's, like, Van Buren-style, like, sideburn beard. That's impressive stuff. Like, so... Yeah, I mean, Michael
Bennett's an impressive guy.
Yeah, Michael Bennett looks like he could have been like a blacksmith in the Old West or something like that. You know, he just looks tough and
kind of the dwarf beard outward, but not quite
not,
the
not
length
down. Yeah, it just kind of goes straight out the side. So he's definitely got a different looking beard to him.
Well, but, you know, last week we talked hair. We got to talk beard this week. So
yeah, a little hair care on every episode, one way or the other.
One way or the other. We'll get to the hair products.
Yeah. So yeah, no, that first drive, I was impressed with it overall. It made me feel a lot better. You know, to see the offense put some points on the board. You know, especially with Jermaine Kearse getting the touchdown catch, I think that's huge. He's gonna be somebody that sees some playing time this year without question.
Yeah, no, a lot of people are looking at him as the guy now to watch on Seattle after, you know, these first two games.
Right. Yeah.
And I think it's pretty exciting. And he was a guy did practice squad a lot of last year, and you know now, and that was I think it was his first NFL kickoff.
This is his first since high school.
Right.
Yeah.
So
kick return was good. It was blocked up well, you know, but he did hit the hole. He got by the one guy who was blocked on the left sideline there, and then he ended up with the kicker bearing down on him. But you know, that's the starting kicker, which is even harder to make miss than say like the backup punter, Walter Thurman. He makes Prater miss, or was it, you know, it was Prater and,
whoever kicks for Broncos.
Yeah, that's Prater. Yeah. And, you know, he gets by him, gets the end zone, shows his wheels there. I was happy for Chop Chop. That's good stuff there.
It was good. And kind of, you know, you wonder what the Seahawks are going to do if they're going to have that playmaker on special teams with Leon Washington leaving. And
yeah.
And so maybe Curse is the guy this year.
I'm hopeful that we find a guy to get back there and be returning kicks without Percy Harvin here, you know, for the first part of the season. Leon Washington was a gigantic weapon for us last year, and that was one of the things that I think was a little underrated with the Percy Harvin move, was when we let go of Leon Washington. There were a lot of games where the offense was struggling and we were having a hard time. Say week one against the Cardinals and Leon has a big return.
Yeah.
You know, against the Dolphins, he runs the one back for the touchdown. Against the Patriots, he had a big return. It seems like when it was, not only did it have big returns, but they were timely. And I think that's just one of those things, like either you got it or you don't.
Yeah.
And Leon had it. And so I was a little worried as to the special team hit that we were going to take with Leon leaving. And I think the fact that, Jermaine looks good back there, you know, running kicks, and also Golden Tate on the punt return.
Right.
That was, that's everything you hope to see out of a punt return.
And the thing that I like about Tate is he is made for punt returns because just the way he moves.
Yeah.
If you can have that quick first move after catching the punt, make at least the first one or two guys miss. That's usually when you have some room to move.
Right. Yeah. It's that first two guys, and he kind of runs with those short steps, kind of a la Darren Sproles a little bit, he doesn't have a real long stride, but he's cooking. I mean, he's moving.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really helps with his balance, and that's why you can see him absorb hits and do a little spin off, or he's really great with that hesitation move. You got a guy coming up and you just kind of, gives a quick little chop step to slow up, let the guy blow by, kind of like in Top Gun, you hit the brakes and let him blow right on by. Like
right.
that's how he does it. And then he feels the need for speed and gets it down the field. So I really like the way that Tate looked taking back the punts, and I look forward to seeing more of that.
Yeah, so maybe
I think it's a good answer there.
Between those two guys, hopefully we found our special teamers that are going to be on return coverage.
Yeah, I think that we definitely have Golden as our punt returner. I think that's going to be written in stone. I think that our kick returns, I think we'll see Curse back there some. I still think that we're going to see some Kristen Michael back there as well at some point. And I'm fine with that. I that guy's electric as well.
Yeah.
So I think that we have adequate fill-ins until Percy comes back, because Percy is a different guy. I mean, he just plays on a whole nother level. Even if he now has an old man hip, I still think he's going to be faster than most people. It'll be good to have him back. But until then, we're going to be all right.
Well, in kickoff returns, I mean, you saw it when they put in the new rule that Leon Washington just wasn't, he wasn't the asset that he was before they put that rule in place.
That is true. And I mean, that took, all of them out. Like, look at Patrick Peterson last year, or even Devin Hester. Like, none of those guys had gigantic years like they had in the past. And I think that does have a lot to do with the fact that they moved the where you kick the ball off, from 5 yards up, and you get more touchbacks and or just deeper kicks as a whole, and that's that.
Still important position, but maybe not as important as
no.
And as point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, we'll be just fine there. So I thought the offense overall looked super sharp in the first half. Russell, like he looked good. He did have some overthrows that were a little concerning, but he also threw a couple nice dimes. That throw to Tate.
Yeah,
along the sideline, that was a thing of beauty. Just abused Champ Bailey. Made our Bronco friend Jared look at me and say, "I think it might be time to have the Champ Bailey conversation." So
yeah, and I don't know. I don't know why Jared was so down on Champ Bailey. I mean, it is the preseason, and
well,
I guess I don't put and it turned out that his foot was injured, but guys just don't play quite guys like that who or. NFL veterans with that much time in, they know they have a roster spot. So, if they don't go quite as hard during the preseason, it isn't that big of a deal.
Yeah, I think this Champ thing's been sneaking up on this team for about a half a season now.
He's getting up there, but, he's still Champ Bailey.
He's still Champ Bailey. He is, but Father Time goes undefeated, man, and there'll be a point where Champ just can't get it done on the outside anymore, and I don't see any room for him at safety for the Broncos, so... That'll be interesting. But
I feel like we're talking way more Broncos football for a Seahawks show, but
just a couple quick hits. I mean, we did play the Broncos, so you got to know thy enemy a little bit and, understand who you picked on and why and how it worked a little bit there. But Russell, he looked good from the pocket, looked good out of the pocket, just calm, cool, collected, doing what Russell does. And Thank God.
Speaking of guys doing what they're doing, how about Tavares Jackson again?
Yeah, there could be a new QB battle brewing here in Seattle. Tavares Jackson finished with 141.2 QB rating for the game, and Russell finished with 141.1. So
right,
maybe Tavares is better by 0.1 QB rating.
Well, I feel like if this were the years where like Mike Teal was the third stringer, that the Seahawks fans would be going, Mike Teal could start over Russell Wilson.
Oh, good gosh, yeah.
Josh Portis, you know. Well, we heard that too. Josh Portis should get a chance at the starting quarterback.
Well, if you're Phil Sims, apparently you're saying that the Seahawks would have gotten more wins with Tavares Jackson last year than Russell Wilson. So that's an interesting point.
Yeah, I did not hear that.
Yeah, I just saw a little blurb about that earlier today. I respect Phil Sims. I think he's a smart guy. I mean, obviously he has a pelt on the wall with a Super Bowl ring and, you know, had the highest QB ranking ever for a Super Bowl winning quarterback as far as a single game. So, you know, he knows what he's talking about to a degree, but come on, man. Like, T-Jack isn't doing any more magic than Russell, and you know that's a fact. I mean, and I like T-Jack, but
I do too. Yeah, and you know, like we talked about this before, T-Jack just doesn't quite have it in those pressure situations to get to win the game.
No.
And would he have won more than 7 games with last year's Seahawks? Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't think he would have gone as far
We weren't going 12-4 with T-Jack.
And maybe T-Jack wins some of those early games where Russell lost, but
I don't know. The only game that I really looked back at on that first half of the season where I felt like Russell kind of cost us was the Rams game.
Mm-hmm.
And those three picks were rough, too. I mean, you know, one, McCoy falls down at the end of the game.
Yeah.
You know, he gets a guy that he kind of shifts in the pocket into a guy as he's throwing on one. And then the very first one he threw right to, I think it was Doug Baldwin, went right through his hands into the defender. I think it was Trumaine Johnson from the University of Montana who picked that up.
Oh.
Yeah, so
nice name drop.
Yeah, yeah, a little shout out to a Grizzly player since we're here from Missoula, Montana. But, you know, that was the one game that I felt like Russell kind of cost us. The other ones I didn't feel like was all on him. So
no, and I think just the, you know,
Braylon Edwards.
Yeah. But against the Cardinals, I think Tavares could have been a little bit stronger coming out of the gate.
Maybe that that was more a function of Sweezy being at right guard and just getting abused by Darnell Dockett.
But Jackson was used to having a bad line that true. In 2011, true. Too.
And so. He has all his pecs now.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, who knows? I mean, you can't go back and dissect every game. But
yeah. Kind of like Skip Bayless saying that if RG3 doesn't injure his knee, the Redskins win that game going away.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, Skip.
Well, and I had to laugh at that, too, because what was wrong with Matt Ryan in the second half in the Falcons game?
Right.
So, but the Seahawks came back in the second half of that game.
Exactly.
So if they can do it against the Redskins, even if, you know, RG3 were at full strength in the second half,
yeah,
you don't know if he's going to come back or, you know, keep the Redskins going at that same pace that they
there's
did in
no
the first
way,
half.
There's no way to tell. There's no way to tell and to say it. It's absolutely ludicrous. But
obviously, you know, Skip Bayless throws out things that he absolutely can't back up, you know. And we can talk about Skip Bayless a little bit more, but
we will.
In that same segment, he talked about, you know, they asked him if he'd rather have Wilson or Kaepernick,
right?
And they say, and he without hesitation, he says Kaepernick,
yeah.
And they go, well, why do you say that? He goes, well, he's 6'4".
Yeah, yeah,
so, yeah. Great, Skip.
Absolutely.
You go with height. As the one reason why you take Kaepernick, you don't say, oh, well, I think he has better speed than Wilson, or I think he, because he has that experience of being in the Super Bowl, I'd take him over Wilson, or, you know, use a fact other than height to back up the point you're trying to
make.
Well,
I mean, you know that every single Super Bowl has been won by a quarterback who's 6'4", right?
Yeah, well, at least, I mean,
yeah. I mean, that's statistically accurate. Don't look it up.
Or 6 feet or higher, maybe.
Yeah, well, that might actually be true.
That might be true.
Yeah, but, I mean, a shorter guy can definitely get it done. Look at Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers is not that tall. He's only 6'2". He's not that tall. In fact, it's one of his sensitive spots. When people come up to him in person, they're like, oh, you're not as tall as I thought you were. He gets a little bristly about it.
Well, and they talked about Drew Brees in that same right. segment, too. And somebody made the point that Drew Brees is a short quarterback. And he goes, yeah, but he's tall for 6'1". He's 6'1".
Yeah, he's probably 6'1", because he's listed at 6 foot. But he's like, he's more like 6'1". He's a taller guy. Have you ever stood next to Russell? I mean, I don't think he has. And I'm sorry, the difference between 5'10 and 5'8 and 6 foot, that, you know, you can't convince me an inch and 3/8 is going to make a big difference. You know, Russell had made a good point in an interview with, a while back, where he was like, you know, say I'm 6'3. Am I really still seeing over guys that are 6'7 and 6'8?
Exactly.
No, I'm still looking through windows. So whatever. Yeah. So he picks Kaepernick based just on his height. So, you know, that's great analysis there, Skip.
Great. Yeah. Well, yeah. The kind of analysis we're used to.
Yeah, exactly. But I will give Chris Broussard and Danny Cannell a little credit there that we're on that panel for kind of calling him out on that. So, yeah, we'll talk a little more about Skip's amazing analysis.
Yeah, we got our Who's Better at Life Than Skip Bayless segment coming up.
Yeah.
But first, before we go into the break, we want to talk about this Packers game coming up a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. This is exciting because we, you know, be on the road, mm-hmm. which is something that we definitely need to work on. That was our bugaboo last year, was road games. I mean, we looked better towards the end of the season, and that was great. But let's make sure that carries over. And this is a hostile environment. You know, you're going in there with a very rabid fan base, you know, and to see them going up against one of the NFC teams that people would put in that upper echelon.
Oh, definitely.
Will be great.
One of the favorites in the NFC to make a run at the Super Bowl. And the one thing that I am interested to see out of this game is that, you know, the offensive line for the Packers is kind of beat up. I mean, even more so than the Broncos' offensive line. I mean, they're stacked. The Broncos are stacked well enough to where they could absorb some of that, but the Packers not so much. And
I don't think so. You know, they lose Bulaga. Was it to the knee injury? He's gone for the season. You know, they had him last year, and we got him for 8 sacks in the first half of the Packer game. So that'll be interesting to see our pass rush against that D line again.
Yeah, and we need to see more out of our pass rush in this game than we had the first two games. So.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, it's something that I think you can see that we're trying to manufacture pass rush a little more this year. Mm-hmm. There's been more blitzing, at least it feels like it. So that's a positive sign for me. We'll get Bruce out there this game, I would think. So it'll be good to kind of see
Tony McDaniel, like you said,
Tony McDaniel. You know, we won't have Jordan Hill, obviously, but, you know, Michael Bennett actually looked really good in the last game, you know, kind of flashed through and got some good penetration. So I'll be looking for that. You know, a big matchup to me that I find interesting is I think the Packers D line and their run defense is kind of porous. So I would really like to see,
well, the Packers defense as a whole. I mean, they're one of those teams that needs a lot of offense to win games.
Yeah, definitely. And I'll be really interested to see, you know, how a Christian Michael does in that game or a Turbin. You know, obviously we're not going to see a lot of Marshawn again. That's fine. I don't need to see a lot of Marshawn. I want to see us run the ball a little bit with some success. Is Sidney going to play in this next game? Is Sidney Rice?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I'd like.
He's another guy where he's one of those guys where I feel, you know, he can.
Just step in week one.
Like Lynch.
Okay. All right. I'd go with you on that. You know, I would like to see him a little bit, but if, you know, he needs a couple extra weeks, that's fine. So, yeah, it'll be good to see against a defense that I think is lesser than the Broncos and maybe on par with the Chargers. I would like to see that us be a little crisper, clean up those penalties, the run game establish itself a little bit more, because that's the identity of this football team is run the ball down your throat.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see if we can do that without Marshawn.
I'm looking forward to see just how chippy the game might get. I wonder if Packers players are still going to be
crying like little babies.
Yeah, well, and I know for a fact that you know, the over-under on replays of that Tate touchdown catch on TV is probably going to be about 12.
Yeah.
So, but I just wonder if the Packers players really, if that has stuck with them over the offseason, or, you know, if they're really not going to care.
You know, at this point, you would think you would have gotten over it. But then again, Aaron Rodgers is one of those guys that seems to carry some big old chips on his shoulder. And he was less than thrilled after the Green Bay game last year. I could see him, you know, bringing a little extra to this game. So that will be interesting to see. I'm sure you're going to see a million signs in the stands, you know, regarding that play.
Oh, yeah.
One of the things I love is that Golden Tate came out and he's just unapologetic about it. You know, he's like, yeah, it's a great play. I look at it as a highlight. You know, won the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. You know what? A touchdown is a touchdown. There's been a million crappy calls, okay, over the course of the history of the NFL that have screwed teams out of way more than the Packers had, you know, problems with this last year. It didn't affect their seeding at all. It didn't affect anything. We still got them a bye by beating the 49ers, you know, a couple weeks later for them, you know, at home. And right. They ended up with the number two seed and getting a bye. So congratulations, Packers. Nothing changed. Get over it. Goodness gracious. I mean, I'd say Seahawks fans have even done a pretty good job getting over, you know, the Super Bowl in 05 in comparison to this. And that was beyond egregious with actual referees. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's just one of those things that you have to get over. And you know, if it's going to take Packers fans a little bit longer. I mean, it wasn't a Super Bowl call. It was just a regular season Monday night call. But where do you come out? Was it a catch?
You know what? Okay, here, this is one of those things where you can make an argument either way, and I'm fine with that. The one thing that I will not argue with a Packers fan is that Golden Tate totally pushed off before that. Just that was illegal. That should have been flagged.
He totally pushed off.
There's nothing you can't defend that, okay? But if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, and if they're not going to call it, then that's the way it is. So, but as far as the play itself, okay, number one, simultaneous possession goes to the receiver. That's the rule, okay? Right. He had one hand up behind there, right? And he had his other hand up on the ball, and he had one foot down. MD Jennings had two hands on the ball, 0 feet on the ground. No feet on the ground. That can't be possession. So, therefore, Golden Tate had possession first, if anything, and then when they come to the ground, it's simultaneous. Doesn't matter whose chest it's closest to. That's not how the rule is written. It's simultaneous possession. Did Golden have two hands on the ball? Yes. Did MD Jennings have two hands on the ball? Yes. Golden had 1 foot down. MD Jennings, 0. That's a catch.
You want to know where I come out on it?
I do.
I don't care. Seahawks won the game.
Well, thanks for blowing up my whole little theory there. I was impassioned about that.
You were impassioned, and yeah. I think that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, you came out on that. That's a win. That's where you came out on that. And that's probably where you need to. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I remember after the game was over watching the catch over, and I didn't think it was as obvious as, I mean, as Packers fans seem to think that it was obviously an interception.
No, you can make an argument either way. Yeah. You really, really can. I mean, if you're a Packers fan and you make an argument to me that it was an interception, I'll entertain it.
Yeah.
I will. I mean, I may disagree with you, but it's one of those all-time great plays. How many people think that the immaculate reception wasn't fair? I mean, there's Raiders fans everywhere that think that...
hit the ground.
That either hit the ground or somebody else had touched it, or I don't remember what the exact controversy is, but it's like the Zapruder film, you know?
Yeah. Well, if a Packers fan were to get in my face and be adamant about it...
Mm-hmm. You'd headbutt him. Well,
because you know me.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd headbutt him, but yeah. I'd give him the... I'd say, hey, yep.
Yeah, you win.
Sure.
Fine.
It was an interception.
Yeah, whatever. We still won. But
still
thanks.
Won.
Yeah. And, you know... Packers fans can whine all they want. There was a lot of controversial calls both ways in that game. And then on top of that, you know, if you want to win the game, don't get your quarterback sacked 8 times in the first half.
Yeah, that would be a good start.
That's just a thought.
So,
I mean, I'm not a coach, you know, but that's maybe where I'd start.
Yeah, yeah. Eight sacks in one half, it's not positive.
No, that is not a good number if you're on offense, that's for sure. But, let's see that pass rush. Let's see how our linebackers match up against Finley in their tight end group there. I still thought that's where we struggled a little bit in pass coverage against the Broncos with linebackers. So be looking to see if we can make another stride there. I think it was better than it was with the Chargers. But, you know, that's still young linebackers, and that's a place you'd expect them to be growing.
And like I said, over-under on that, I'm going with 12. I'm going to take 12 replays.
12 on the take catch.
I think you're going 12 for that game.
So let's say the over under is 11.5. You're thinking 12. You're thinking 12. I would take now on the national broadcast, like or.
Oh yeah.
Well, we're probably going to get Packers announcers too. So, I'll take the under on that.
Okay.
That's a lot. That's a lot in one broadcast. 12.
It is a lot.
Yeah. I bet you we end up with 7.
Really?
Yeah.
You gotta go that low.
Well, that feels like a lot. Like that's a lot of them. It'll be talked about more than 7 times, but that to be shown on the screen, there's a bit of redundancy there. 7.
Okay.
Solid 7. I feel I'll a bit go, even better about it the more.
I'll go back and forth on my DVR 5 times just to watch it and celebrate the win for the 12th time.
Yeah. We may have to come up with a friendly wager on that one too. All right. That'd be good. Okay.
All right. Well, that does it for our look at the Broncos game and at the upcoming Packers game. After the break, we are going to go NFC Best again and look at an article in ESPN the magazine on the Seahawks this last week. Good article. Talk about that. Have a little Harbaugh Masterpiece Theater in honor of his love for Shakespeare. So look forward to that. And then who is better at life than Skip Bayless? All coming up after the break.
Never scared over here. Never scared over here. Never scared over here. 12 men represent for them Seahawks. Always looking for the win, we don't see loss. Set the tone for the team when we chant. Gotta lean in our stance when we dance. Call it sea walking whenever we ballin'. Never scared over here. Whenever we ballin'.
And we're back. That was Never Scared by Sandman, Mr. 06, and Infinity. I want to thank Sandman for hitting us up on our Facebook page, introducing us to that Never Scared track. They're actually going to be recording the music video at the Raiders game coming
really?
Up. Yeah, it sounds like just meet up in front of the pro shop around 4 o'clock.
Okay.
They're going to be recording there up in the stands and shooting their music video for that song.
Yeah, so. Getting a rap video, people. Let represent the 12th man. And I know they're excited at the idea of having a bunch of people there. So make it happen, folks.
Great track.
That tune's catchy.
I found
myself kind of whistling that to myself about 6-7 times today, after hearing it this morning. And good stuff. So thank you very much, Sam, man. That's good stuff.
Yep. If you want to check it out, ReverbNation.com and it's /NEVA scared, never scared. So now's about the time we go into our Harbaugh segment. And have to say, after last week and hearing about his interest in Shakespeare, I think we need to do a little bit of Masterpiece Theater with Jim Harbaugh this week and go back. This story is a couple weeks old.
Yeah.
I like to pull old stories, like with the Browns trade falling through, and somebody called me out for posting it about a day late on the Facebook page.
Oh,
and,
no.
Yeah. So
what are you going to do? I mean, we have lives, too. I mean, this isn't just all we do all day.
It's true.
I mean, I kind of do, but you you have like an actual life.
Well, I can't get to the Facebook page all the time, and
no.
I just know that the Moffitt trade is something interesting, and a lot of people follow John Moffitt. I know you.
Near and dear to my heart.
Near and dear to your heart. So got to put that out there, and not everybody follows Seahawks news that closely either. So if I'm 24 hours late on some breaking news,
cut the man some slack,
cut me a little bit of slack. But it was kind of a cute little poke. He said, a little bit late there, slow poke.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, so
fair.
It wasn't harsh.
It's fair.
Yeah,
fair.
I hit him with a like.
Yeah, good. Good. Well, what we're gonna do instead is we're gonna go a couple weeks back in the Wayback Machine here and do a little Harbaugh ripping. We kind of played who's going to play the reporter here and who's going to play Harbaugh, but I kind of like your sultry Harbaugh tones.
Yeah,
that you
called
out of your
my
last
bedroom
one.
Harbaugh, and I didn't
yeah.
I didn't quite know. I thought maybe it was like a Wolverine Harbaugh, but
it's a bedroom Wolverine Harbaugh.
We'll go
how about that?
Bedroom Wolverine Harbaugh.
Yeah.
So I'll take the role of Harbaugh again this week, and you go the reporter. This goes back to the Eric Wright trade.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to trade
attempt
for him,
to trade.
And then that fell through. But then they picked him up as a free agent. And Eric Wright, of course, a noted PED user while he was with Tampa Bay. And of course, Harbaugh called out the Seahawks. He definitely noticed the Seahawks and their issues that they've been having over the last few years.
Yeah, and I definitely noticed this story. That's why we're going to do Harbaugh Theater.
Right.
Yeah. So
let's get to it. Adam is the reporter.
Okay. During minicamp, you had some pretty strong words about the Seahawks and their Adderall problem and Eric Wright.
I don't agree with that.
Huh?
The way you characterized it.
You don't agree with how I characterized it?
No.
You don't think those were strong words?
That I was aware?
Well, you said you wanted to make sure that your guys didn't do stuff like that, that you played by the rules, and yet Eric Reich did have some of that. You were aware that when you signed him, that that was in his past.
What I'm going to say is this. Like I said, talk to Trent on that. He's a better person to talk to about it. He's got a clear understanding of the transaction.
You did say that. I think you said you wanted to be above reproach or beyond reproach.
Correct. That hasn't changed.
You think everyone on your roster qualifies for that at this point?
I think our guys do a great job of playing within the rules, yes. And as a coach, you anticipate and you deal with things as they occur. Anticipate and resolve.
And scene.
And scene.
But just the sheer hypocrisy of this man.
Well, the fact that he couldn't even address it, that he has to, you know, kind of play the roundabout, I'm not going to talk about it. You talk to Trent. And, yeah. You know, you knew this was going to, he has to know this is going to come back to bite him at some point. And, you know, I don't even begrudge him a little bit for calling out the Seahawks. Being a division rival, you expect that, but the way he did it.
Yeah. No, I would do the same thing. Like, I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, he had to know that it was going to come back to him, and just to not even, you know, to try and gloss over it. But, you know, it really didn't get picked up that much. And, but you have to share the hypocrisy with it when it comes up. So,
yeah. Thanks a lot, Harbaugh, for once again doing a little Texas two-step around the issue that you've created. So.
And congratulations for definitely noticing it. You read the news. yep.
Exactly.
So congrats.
So there's a little bit of hating Harbaugh for you folks. I feel better. My sports hate fueled up just a little bit more, like we should.
Just a little bit. Got to prepare for week two.
Yep. Absolutely. So moving on from Harbaugh.
Yes.
We wanted to get in a little bit to this article on ESPN that just came out by Alyssa. And I'm sorry, Alyssa. I'm sure you're a lovely lady. I'm going to totally butcher your last name.
So we'll just go with Alyssa.
Yeah, it's Alyssa. I think it's Roenig. Or Roenig?
Roenig.
Something along those lines. It ends with a GK, so you tell me how you pronounce that. But yeah.
But great anyway, story in ESPN, the magazine.
Yeah, amazing story. It was called Lotus Poson 2. But basically, the crux of the article is just going into how different the Seattle Seahawks are running their organization from top to bottom. And mm-hmm. I really believe that what we're doing as an organization is way out ahead of the curve. And, you know, it starts out just with a Pete Carroll quote, you know, and he just says, it's different here. Have you noticed?
Right.
And, you know, and she was thinking, well, yeah, you know, obviously I did notice. But, you know, they have the high performance sports psychologist, Mike Gervais, that mm-hmm. comes in. Not Ricky Gervais, Mike Gervais.
Mike Gervais.
Yeah. Yeah. So
no relation?
Hard telling. But yeah. I think he's a little less sarcastic. So that's good.
It's possible.
But, you know, they do all sorts of things, you know, whether it's yoga or, you know, just visualization drills or things along those lines. But the idea behind it all, and which I find refreshing, is you have to care about the person a little bit to get the best performance possible out of somebody.
Right.
And, you know, that's something that Pete Carroll learned when he was at USC. He talked a little bit about, you know, players that would come back after being at USC and achieving quite a bit of success and then going to the NFL and struggling a little bit. And they'd come back and they'd say, you know, quote, it's hardcore. You don't know anybody. You go home and you're by yourself. You don't feel connected at all. And, you know, Pete Carroll felt like they had reached guys on a different level so that they could perform on a higher level. And I think you saw that with their guys that came out of the NFL.
I think so. And one of the things I wonder after reading this article is if a guy like Tavarius Jackson experienced something like that, of being in Seattle and feeling that, having that type of feeling in the Seattle locker room and then going to a place like Buffalo where he really didn't do anything at all. And, you know, was really happy to come back even mm-hmm. in the backup role.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of have to wonder if maybe they're building some of that, if that's what he's building in the NFL. So to get players to want to be in Seattle. And, you know, one of the things that I appreciated about the article in the beginning is just how Carroll talked about how it really stuck with him after losing the Patriots job
mm-hmm.
and going back to college and really, you know, focusing on what he could do differently when he got that opportunity again.
Right.
And instead of just, you know, throwing in the towel and just saying, you know, and well, and after having so much success as a college head coach, just he could have been happy, you know, be a guy like Nick Saban and just be happy with the college game and you know, not really look to get back into the NFL. But, you know, he had that drive, that desire to get back to the NFL and try these kind of different things.
Definitely. And, you know, even heard Moffitt talk a little bit about it. I listened to an interview that he did with Softy on KJJR out of Seattle, and it was when he was first traded to the Browns, so he thought he was heading to the Browns. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that he talked about that, you know, Moffitt talked about that he was a little disappointed about was that he was going to leave this way of doing things.
Yeah.
And how he really believed in what they were doing was above and beyond what other teams are. I mean, when Pete says, you know, we're going to do things differently and the best that's ever been done, that's not lip service. Like they give it an effort, and they have an owner in Paul Allen who will, you know, back him up on that to the point even to where his soccer team, the Sounders, he wants them to start doing a lot of these same things as well, you know, and they've experienced a lot of success, you know, as far as MLS is concerned. So I just really like the way that the team is taking an approach to players as people as a whole. For example, at the Rookie Symposium back here in June, Chris Ballard was the director of player personnel for the Chiefs, and he came up on stage and he talked to the rookies, and you know, he says, quote, "Nobody cares about your problems. The fans don't care, the media doesn't care, and ownership doesn't care. They care about results." Mm-hmm. And that's a mark of the old NFL. That's a mark of the old thinking, where guys, you know, they were just basically used as a commodity and then spit right back out. And if you're not healthy, mind, body, and spirit, as well as physically, you can't perform at your peak level. I mean, I know that just personally in my personal life.
Well,
you know?
You say it's the old way of thinking, but it might be the current way of thinking. And it's just that the Seahawks are doing it differently. They're taking a different approach. They aren't treating players like that way, like just demanding results. And one of the things that I thought was interesting in the article was that a guy like Tom Cable, he could see himself, you know, and the way he used to do things, and, mm-hmm. and being that guy that, you know, the guy who would berate players on the field and that type of, and to kind of scale that back and see that, you know, when a guy maybe doesn't hit his block or he doesn't catch his pass, that maybe it's not his ability that's given him problems. Maybe there's something in his personal life that he's dealing with, and maybe there's an issue there that they can address rather than, you know, dressing down a guy on the field and embarrassing him, the player in front of his teammates. You know, maybe there's something that they can work with there and get the results from the player through a different way, you know, focusing on that mental health aspect as opposed to all the physical.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one of the quotes that Cable had in that article, you know, he said, you know, if a guy drops his outside hand or missed an underneath stunt and he berates him, he goes ballistic on the guy. Who's wrong? He says, I am, for going ballistic on the guy. Because, you know, he goes on to say that, you know, that's attacking the player's self-confidence. And all the player is learning out of that is if he screws up, you know, he's going to get yelled at if you make a mistake. But, you know, what he says, quote, if you make a mistake here, it's going to get fixed.
Right.
And so it's not about berating a guy just, you know, for that tough guy NFL image. It's more one thing that they say a lot that really kind of resonates through to me in a zillion different press conferences is that they're all great teachers. All the coaches are great teachers. And I think they look at this much more as being a teacher first and a coach second in a way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with this organization, between, you know, having, you know, sports psychologists there, you know, doing yoga and meditation and, you know, having top-notch food services and things like that, where they're getting like free-range chickens and, you know, all that stuff to feed them. You know, that's really good stuff. And it all boils over, and they're doing things differently in every aspect too. And it comes down to even just player acquisition and how they, you know, look after players. You look at John Schneider and the way he's been in the draft, he's always unearthed, you know, good guys. And one of the things that stood out to me in that article as well is one of the things that made Russell Okung a lock for them in the draft, you know, over a couple other, because that was a draft that was deep in left tackles at that point.
Oh,
you know,
yeah, they had all kinds of left tackles.
Yeah, Trent Williams, Brian Bulaga, whatever. But what made Okung stand out to them was they all went bowling, Carroll, mm-hmm. Schneider, and Okung. And Okung rolled a 63, which is, My daughter can roll better than a 63, you know?
Yeah, you should be able to grandma bowl a 63.
Right? Right. That John Schneider apparently rolls the exact same score, and Okung just smiled and just wanted a rematch.
Yeah.
That was the big thing, was he was terrible at it, but he competed like crazy, and, you know, he just wanted a rematch, but he was good-natured about it. When it was all said and
well,
done.
Well, and in a situation like that where a guy could be like, oh, you know, and mail it in. Well, no, where you bowl a bad game and you want to say, oh, it was because of this.
Right.
You know, oh, my pinky finger isn't, you know,
yeah.
Is kind of bugging me, or, you know, I didn't have my wrist thing for bowling, or, you know, I bowl better when I'm drunk, you know, that kind
right,
of thing.
So, right. Yeah.
You know, instead of making excuses, he was, you know, he was good natured about it. And that's the thing that you get the sense of in this article, is that the Seahawks are going out and they're finding those type of guys that are going to be upbeat. They're going to be positive. They're not the guys who will point the finger. They're going to be guys who are accountable, optimistic. And I think those are good traits to look for in players.
It's how I want my team to be built. I'll tell you what. I mean, that's the one thing that this makes me proud of my organization, to read things like this, that they're doing things differently, that they're looking at players less of as a commodity and as actual people. You know, and one of the guys that I did find interesting that really didn't buy in all that much was Matt Flynn.
Matt Flynn, yeah.
You know, he said, quote, "The way I look at it, leadership and being that guy is, don't be someone you're not. Don't be a hoorah guy jumping around and clapping your hands if you're not that guy. Makes you look desperate, makes you look silly. That's not me."
Well, and I can see, I mean, when I saw Pete Carroll in his USC days, you kind of wondered, you know, is he really that guy? Is he that guy all the time, or is he just that guy on the field? And and after watching him at his time in Seattle, you get the sense that, yeah, he's really that guy.
Yeah, I'm surprised he didn't name his book Hoorah Forever instead of Win Forever.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah. But no, he really is that guy. They eat, drink, and sleep and breathe it. And I love the approach on all levels. I think it's innovative. I think it's forward thinking. It's one of those things that you can see it showing up in the performance on the field with players that a lot of people just cast off or overlooked.
Well, and when you're in when you're in the NFL and he's looking for those types of things that are going to be take that different approach that other teams aren't going to take. So what I'm seeing from the Seahawks is he's looking for ways to get an edge and anywhere he can. And through coaching is where he's trying to do things differently. He said in the article, his dream was to fundamentally change the way players are coached.
Sure.
And so by doing that, I think the word's going to start getting around that and they're going to actually – players are going to want to come in Seattle. The good players are going to want to stay in Seattle because they aren't going to want to go to those other places and be under those types of coaches that they may have been used to in the past.
For sure. And you saw it this year in free agency when Antoine Winfield chooses the Seahawks over the Vikings, or when Michael Bennett signs on just a 2-year deal. And when
they can win a Super Bowl. With the
Yeah,
Seahawks,
yeah. Michael Bennett signs a 1-year deal, and Cliff Avril just signs a 2-year deal, and they're here because A, it's a competitive team, and B, there's world class facilities, and they take care of their players in a way that nobody else does. I think that's special, and I think that's one of the reasons you see a T-Jack come back, just like you had mentioned before. So, congratulations to Seahawks. I think this is a change that is needed.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those changes where you wouldn't mind seeing that spread around the NFL
at all.
To see players getting treated better, because the whole style of coaching that's in the past that could probably it could be on its way out.
Yeah, it's time.
All right, so that covers fills our NFC Best segment, and we're going to go ahead and move on to Who is Better at Life than Skip Bayless, one of our favorite segments.
Yeah.
And, of course, we talked a little bit about Skip Bayless earlier. You know, one of the things that I'm liking that he talked about in that segment was that Seahawks fans are blowing up his Twitter feed.
Yeah.
And calling him out for
everything.
Well, for everything. But, you know, his tweet about saying that the Broncos are so bad that the Seahawks could win the AFC West.
Yeah, they're the biggest challengers to the Patriots. Yeah,
yeah, even bigger challenges to the Patriots. Yeah, out of the West. So
right, because he has no clue which conference Seattle actually plays in.
Well, and I have to give him I think he was trying to be sarcastic, and that's what he came out and said. I can't believe, you know, I know he doesn't sometimes make the best analysis, but I have to think that he's smart enough to know that the Seahawks are in the NFC now.
Look, here's the thing. I think this is one of those things that people, like, he puts out this tweet. It's obviously wrong. And he pulls, like, your favorite fifth grade trick when you said something kind of mean to somebody, or, you know, something that maybe you shouldn't have to a teacher or something like that. And they look at you and they, you know, kind of call you out on it. You're like, oh, I was just seeing if you'd pay attention. That's pretty much what he did with this. Oh, I put out a sarcastic tweet.
It's kind of one of my favorite quotes from the old Wayne's World movie, where Garth and he's sitting on the hood of this car, and he says, "Do you think Bugs Bunny was hot when he dressed up as a girl bunny and put on?"
Yeah.
No, neither did I. I was just asking.
Just asking. Yeah, and I feel like this was that kind of excuse with that. No, I put out a sarcastic tweet, like pretending I didn't even know what conference they're in. You didn't know. Okay, just own up to it. Wear it, Skip.
Well, what I like is that we're blowing up his Twitter feed. He can't make a comment without Seahawks fans coming back at him, and right. I appreciate that. So let's keep that up. In the meantime, my pick for the week on Better Than Life Than Skip Bayless is Golden Tate.
All right.
And, you know, I have to say I'm pretty impressed with the fact of, you know, he's out there with some senior PGA golfers
really?
Here recently.
I didn't know this.
Well, they had an annual Closest to the Pin competition.
Oh, okay.
Steven Hauschka, Golden Tate. And
how is it that every kicker is a good golfer?
I don't know. But, yeah, apparently Hauschka is a good golfer on the team. But what I don't understand is that, you know, how well Golden Tate can swing it, because he's a lefty, mm-hmm. and he actually goes with the cross-handed grip. So,
seriously?
Yeah, he goes so whereas a right-handed person would grip the top of the golf club with his left hand, mm-hmm. and then right mm-hmm. hand below, he actually goes with his right hand and his left hand below.
Okay.
And then... And golfs as a right, you know, from the right side
righty,
of the ball.
But with his hands flip-flop from the standard right-handed grip.
And I guess he took a lot of heat from these senior PGA players gripping the club like that, which, you know, understandable. That's not a grip that you see very often.
No.
So using a wedge, his second of three shots, he put 10 feet from the pin. From 60 yards.
That's impressive.
It is impressive for you know, especially considering the grip.
Yeah.
So, you know, being a golfer myself, mm-hmm. I have an appreciation for the fact that, well, not only that he has a good golf swing.
Yeah.
But the fact that, you know, he can put it close to the pin with it and against these senior PGAers. And it was Jim Gallagher, who I have no idea who he is, but... he actually, you know, got inside 6 feet, so only about 4 feet inside of Golden. But
that's pretty impressive.
You know, just
Golden's
the fact
part.
That Golden Tate was in the competition.
Well, I hope his golf swing looks better than his throwing motion. Like that's
has to be.
Yeah. I mean, otherwise you'd have like one of those Barkley golf swings, you know, like
right. Yeah. Yeah.
The lurch in the middle and all that. But,
well, he wouldn't be able to even compete. He wouldn't even get it on the green with a Barkley swing.
That's a good point.
Yeah. You know, congrats to Golden Tate, you know, almost besting one of the PGA pros at his own game, but, you know, getting it pretty close.
Yeah, impressive stuff. Well, my pick here for Better at Life Than Skip Bayless is a fellow Seahawk. Derek Coleman, the backup fullback, number 40. The reason why I picked him for this week is I just learned something about him this week that was rather remarkable. Apparently, he lost the majority of his hearing as a child.
Really?
Yeah, and they have no clue why. Like, he says it just went away. And so he hears, you know, tones and sounds, but, you know, it's not like you or I. And so he probably will never hear my praise for him on this podcast, which is a shame. But, you know, he's taken that, and he doesn't use it as an excuse in any way, shape, or form. You know, Pete Carroll has come out and just said, yeah, I mean, we don't even think about it. I mean, he's a master at reading lips and, you know, wears a hearing aid, you know, from time to time to try mm-hmm. to help with that. One thing that I really liked about it is he said that he sees it an advantage, and when he feels it's an advantage is when he's playing on the road and the crowd noise is really loud.
Sure.
Doesn't affect him.
Yeah, he doesn't care.
Yeah, it's all the same to him. So
that is fascinating.
Yeah.
You wouldn't expect a guy, well, and You know, it speaks to the type of players that they go out and we were just talking about that they go out and get some of these guys that you wouldn't even know these types of things because they're just that good.
Yeah.
I mean, to be able to overcome that kind of
a sensory deprivation of some point, you know, to play on a professional level.
I mean, even to play at the collegiate level, I think would be impressive.
And, yeah. You know, and he says, you know, very rarely, but sometimes he'll just ask a player for, you know, a second time about the play or something like that that's going on. You know, running backs coach Sherman Smith said the only thing he does differently is when he's in the meeting room, if he realizes he's standing behind Coleman, he'll speak much louder. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, when he's in front of him,
he can read the lips.
Yeah, he just talks normally. Wow. So, you know, just big props to Derek Coleman for, you know, taking something, even finding ways to where it would be an advantage for him and, you know, improvising, adapting and overcoming, you know, and that's impressive stuff to me. That's my better at life than Skip Bayless.
That's a good one. And it makes you want to root for a guy like that much more.
Yeah. And I was kind of a fan of his before. Like, I've liked his play. And,
yeah.
You know, Pete said he's turned out to be one of their more solid special teams contributors. So I'm hopeful he makes the roster because I think he's earned it to this point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then on top of all that, it's a good story and, you know, a good guy. I wish him nothing but the best. So.
So we'll see that coming up. Yeah. Hopefully, when roster cuts come out, hopefully Mr. Coleman is still on the team.
Yeah.
Definitely one of those guys you want to root for.
You
so,
betcha.
I think that does it for our show today. I want to let people know, again, check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/Seahawkers podcast. 662 likes so far. So
holy buckets.
Gotta like
serious?
That, yeah.
Well, so, I feel very liked suddenly. Yeah. Like that. Yeah, absolutely.
Appreciate that.
Yeah.
Again, we'll look for your comments. We're going to do more of Who is Better at Life than Skip Bayless. So if you hear of any of those stories out there like Derek Coleman, those are the types of stories we want to look for and talk about. And doesn't have to be Seahawks player. We've shown that in the past.
Yeah.
We'll recognize anybody in that segment. So keep them coming. Hit us up on Twitter at SeahawkersPod so you can find us there. And I think that does it for this week's show.
You bet, man. All right, one other thing to say.
That's right. Go Hawks!